I've got a very good crop of questions for which I thank you. Very interesting. I wanted to have questions and answers so that I got some idea of where you are at. I don't know whether I do have any idea where you're at as a result of these questions, but it just gives me a better sense of connection, I suppose. And they're pretty wide-ranging. And I haven't really been able to group them very much. I've done my best, but so I may find myself going back to the same topics again and again. And we'll see how time goes, but it could be that we can have some follow-ups. So we'll plunge right into the heart of the matter. You stress the importance of effort. How can I avoid to fall in the wrong attitude of willfulness? What are the distinguishing factors between willfulness and right effort? Yes, it's interesting, isn't it, when we discuss the subject of effort, always the question of willfulness arises. I sometimes wonder whether we're not too worried about willfulness, although undoubtedly it is an issue. Anyway, I'll try to say a bit more about that later. So there's a question later where I'm asked, what did I learn about sheep? Well, this is one of my learnings about sheep. If you want the sheep to get through the gate, don't just push them through. Because if you try to sort of force them through, the sheep just scatter. So that's the problem of willfulness. If you want to get the sheep through the gate, you have to sort of use their own mentality, their own energies, to get them through, if you see what I mean. Like one of the things I found, if you want to move sheep in a particular direction, don't go straight at them, move to the side, and then they'll move away from you in the direction you want them to go. Do you get my point? So if you're working with your own energies, you need to take into account what they're like and sort of coax them in the direction that you want them to go. This is the point of the sheepdog and sheep metaphor. I'm trying desperately to think of a concrete example, but I can't think of one. Well, I suppose that, for instance, if you are wanting to meditate regularly, well, make sure that you don't meditate too long, if you see what I mean. Because if you set yourself to sit for a long time, I used to do this, you know, nothing if not wholehearted. So I used to try to sit for an hour. And of course I couldn't do it, or rather I could sit there for an hour, but I couldn't meditate. And then I felt not like doing it the next day. So, well, meditate for half an hour and enjoy it, and then extend from there. So willfulness is simply effort applied in a crude and immature way. So that you're not really taking into account your own nature and character. I think it's inevitable. So I don't think you should be too frightened of it. You're bound to do it, particularly if you're young, if you don't know yourself very well. And I sometimes think that in our movement there's become such a sort of a terror of being willful that people don't make enough effort. I remember Bhante talking about this in the early days, and he was saying that his observation was that you discovered how to make a correct effort, a right effort, by first of all making a wrong effort. You know, you become a bit sort of rigid, a bit stiff and over-mindful, maybe. And, you're not going to be able to sustain that. You'll either just forget about it, or you'll have a sort of a rebellion, an inner rebellion, sometimes an outer rebellion. And, well, then you've learnt something. So you need to sort of make an effort in the way that you can and then learn from the results of that and learn more about how you move yourself in the right direction. Probably as one gets older, one comes to understand one's own character and energies, hopefully, a bit better and able to work with those energies more successfully. When you're young, you're untried, you're untested, you don't know what's in you. And my advice there would be, unless you've got some real serious personality problem, just try your best, and sometimes you will be willful, there will be a reaction, pick yourself up and try again, taking into account the experience that you've got. So don't be too frightened of willfulness unless, you know, that you come to realise that this is a major problem, in which case there's probably some other factor at work. Your willfulness is probably connected with some superego sort of problem, if you like. Some voice in your head that's telling you you need to do this in order to be a good boy. So I hope my general point is clear, that we all need to learn about our own energies and learn how to work with them. And that entails action, doing. And acting means making mistakes, getting it wrong, going too far. And better to go too far than not to to go at all. So sometimes I fear that in, you know, introducing the notion of willfulness too early, we prevent people from making the very efforts which they need to make. There's so much more that could be said about this. I suppose that what occurs to me, that the whole Dhamma life is predicated upon a sort of imbalance. There's an imbalance between what you can see ahead of you and where you find yourself now. And you need that. You need that imbalance. You need that tension. If you don't see further than you are now, well, you'll never move. You'll just be an ordinary person and carry on acting, you know, as your conditioning dictates. But when you do see further than you are now, then you need to make some conscious effort. Conscious effort, in other words, that breaks the balance of, you know, instinctive conditioning and so forth. So you deliberately try to be something that you're not now. And that entails some even mental, you could say, instruction to yourself. It's as if you're telling yourself something. And that creates an imbalance. So you're going to have to work with that. And what you try to do is break that balance in such a way that you do move to a higher level and you restore the balance on another level. But it's inevitable. You cannot avoid it. You won't just move forward. Well, you haven't done in that way for, you know, countless lifetimes, so why should you do it now? It's bound to entail some conscious stepping beyond yourself. But if you step too far beyond yourself, there's going to be a reaction. Well, that will happen. Then pick yourself up and try to do it better next time. So my general point, I hope, is clear. I'll talk more about this tomorrow, because I did give a trailer, didn't I? I said that effort also needs to be balanced by non-effort. And in talking about spiritual receptivity, I'll be talking more about that side of things. And I hope that will become clearer. So whilst there is a problem of effort, of willfulness, don't get nervous of making an effort, or don't use it as an excuse to avoid making an effort. If you really find that it's for you a major problem, then you need to do quite a bit of self-investigation and see why you're doing it, what's driving you to go too far. I think a healthy person will just naturally move from effort to balance, effort to balance. So this second question comes along the same lines. In dealing with drives and tendencies relating to the Manoniyama, how do you keep a balance so that you're not just employing willful techniques, i.e. restrictive eating habits becoming eating disorders? Well, that's pretty extreme if, you know, your attempt to be more careful with, you know, craving in connection with eating, if it becomes a disorder. And clearly there's some other psychological factors at work. And that does happen. We're complex beings, and in modern culture, we often don't have the wholesome upbringing that we really need, and we're left with unresolved issues connected with family and parents and so forth that then get played out in the context of our Dhamma life. But the major point here is spiritual friendship. This is the major point. You need good spiritual friends, particularly those who are more experienced than you. People who will help you to understand yourself, help you to unravel yourself to yourself. That's the antidote to this sort of thing. I don't think it's very easy to do it yourself, because your own confusions and then get mixed up with it all, if you see what I mean. The confusion, the very confusions that have led you to a confused application of effort, mean that you're not going to get clear. So spiritual friends are indispensable. Being in contexts where you're supported, being in healthy contexts. I'm sure that all of you find being here at Padmaloka, you benefit partly, or mainly perhaps, from the very positive atmosphere here. You just benefit from being in nature, just being in greenery and things growing. You feel more kind of whole and wholesome. So we need to do things that promote that sort of emotional wholeness. So yes, if you have a tendency to get your genuine spiritual aspirations mixed up with unresolved past business, family business or whatever, well, you need friends who can help you to get a more balanced viewpoint. You may need more experienced help in the form of some sort of therapy, maybe. But you do need friendship to help you to sort it all out. And it takes time. It's not going to be a quick business. Often we have to go through strange peregrinations. You definitely connect and you definitely sense something, but there's a lot that's not worked out. And you have to work it out before you can really apply yourself in a very full way.